When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Let's clear out winter and clean up the lawn with Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, get the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and make your lawn work easier with a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power. And with convenient online shopping, you can order on the app, pick up in store, and get outside sooner. Get your yard spring ready with the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower, now just $89 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Welcome to Creature Feature, a safari through the consciousness of animals and man, finding the common threads that bind together all living creatures. I'm Katie Golden. I studied psychology and evolutionary biology at Harvard, and I pretend to be a frustrated bird on Twitter. Today on Creature Feature, we'll be talking about how both animals and humans go to dramatic lengths to get crunk off their butts. It's reefer madness as we find out what drug junkie dolphins are hitting rock bottom for. Where are the bird mothers against drunk flying? Why are scientists creating a butterfly sex potion? Also, we find out about the Bermuda Triangle of Death that all the otter teens are dying to explore. Discover this and more as we answer the age-old question, what's the grossest alcoholic beverage in the world, and why did my guests drink enough of it to get lit? So, first I want to talk about flying. It's kind of scary, especially because you're at the mercy of a human pilot. Whenever the pilot comes on over the speakers to give an announcement, I'm always searching for vocal cues of something wrong, like, does he sound stressed, anxious, angry? Well, my absolute nightmare would be if he sounded drunk. Even though you shouldn't mix flying and drinking, we're about to find out that some humans and animals do. In fact, one such pilot has become a master of flying under the influence. Creature Feature starts right now. So, Robert, do you fly much?
Yes.
Good. Well, do you ever, like, fantasize about flying cars and why we don't have them yet and a glorious future where all cars are just flying around?
No, you know, I drive a lot. I've probably driven up and down California alone more than anyone who's not a truck driver. I've put about 120,000 miles on my car in the last 2 years. So I have very little faith in the driving ability of most people, and I have even less faith in their ability to pilot a flying car.
Well, that's the thing. That's what always gets me when it's like you see like Star Wars or The Fifth Element with Bruce Willis. If any asshole like Bruce Willis can just fly a car, the consequences of drunk drivers is just way, way, way worse.
Oh my God. It's a night. And think about terrorism. Like,
yeah.
Like, we're already having this problem because people can buy guns. But
right.
What if you let people buy like a 2-ton flying bullet that they can crash into anything? Like, how do you
right.
regulate that?
Or like a drunk terrorist. Would it cancel it out? Like, if it was a drunk terrorist, would they be like, I'm trying to terrorism, but I'm too drunk?
I mean, I think in that case, alcohol's kind of the hero of the story.
Mm.
Yeah. It's like Zero Dark 30, but instead of a bunch of CIA guys,
yeah. It's
like a bottle of Jim Beam.
Instead of John Krasinski, who's now always the hero, it's just alcohol.
Yeah. When did he get abs?
I don't know.
Because they look angry in everything I've seen of him now, like furious abs.
We never did see his bare chest in the office, so maybe they've always been there.
I mean, no, you can tell. You can see in his eyes that he doesn't have impressive abs in the office.
The faint reflection of the abs that should be there weren't in his eyes at that time.
But flying cars.
Flying cars. So, yeah, I mean, like, we're all very, we have wishful thinking about flying cars, but, you know, you got drunk people like Hayden Christensen jumping out of a car and everybody going, great, now there's no driver in that car. It's just going to crash into an orphanage.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's like that scene is like, there's so many questions I have about how traffic control works in Coruscant. Like, what is the organization
even? Do Jedi not have to go to traffic school?
Well, I don't, like, what's shocking about that is that nobody reacts as if it's a big deal.
Right.
Like, the other, like, it's like.
They must see it all the time.
Yeah, which is terrifying.
Right. Like, everyone's hyped up on death sticks and jumping out of their cars and everything's crashing around. And, you know, maybe the Empire wasn't such a bad idea.
Yeah, I think you would probably start to hunger for, like, an authoritarian dictator after, like, living in suicide traffic for that long.
Right. Just to stop these awful flying cars from smashing into everything as soon as someone like 420s that day.
Yeah, yeah. No, that seems like a night. Although I got to say, like, when you talk about drinking or smoking in flying cars, that's when I want them.
Right,
because I love going out in the middle of nowhere on like a friend's land in like a Jeep or an old truck and just getting wrecked on painkillers and liquor and doing donuts and stuff and driving through fields of trash with like just old beater cars. It's the most fun in the world.
Yeah.
So if you could like have like a safe flying car driving area.
That doesn't sound like you could.
Well, but oh, as long as you're the only person who can die.
Just a bunch of pillows around.
Well, if you die, it's fine. You're choosing to take that risk. There just needs to be a bit way where it's like, you can come out here and do stupid things in a flying car while you're ripped to shit, and nobody will get killed other than maybe you.
Right, right.
Yeah, like that sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, well, this is why I'm having you on this podcast about vices and animals. And speaking of which, birds totally go the full Star Wars route and they drink and fly all the time. So like in the winter, they will the berries freeze and then sort of the insides of the berries ferment and brew into like a little jello shot. And the birds eat these and get wasted.
It's like the bird equivalent of those like semi-frozen margarita, those little slushy packs that you buy at Ralph's or the grocery store.
Yeah, those are nasty.
Yeah, they're terrible, but at the same time, I'm a big fan of like that kind of drinking, like fruit drinking for when you're like walking around a city.
Yeah, the drinking that you immediately regret before the alcohol has even hit your system.
Yeah, but you want, like, the reason I think the birds are being smart in their drunk flying choices is that if you're going to be out in the world getting really wrecked in the middle of the day and then, like, navigating a city, you want not just alcohol, but you want sugars and salts and some carbs.
Electrolytes.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. That's a smart way to city drink.
Gatorade up your booze, people.
Yeah.
It's safe.
No, when I was wandering around San Francisco with a couple of friends last week, and we took a Camelback and we filled it half full of tequila and half full of frozen lime popsicles.
Right.
And that's basically the same thing, except where we were on the ground.
Yeah, you're being birds.
Yeah, we were being birds.
Yeah. I've got a great quote here from Megan Larive, who's the laboratory coordinator at the government agency Environment Yukon in Canada, where these birds are getting crunk. She says, most birds likely just get a bit tipsy and very few people would be able to pick them out as intoxicated. However, every now and then, some birds just overdo it. And when they overdo it, they like crash into buildings and die.
Well, yeah, but you got to weigh that against how much fun they're having.
That's true.
And it sounds like a lot.
It's a wild 5 minutes and then a sudden invisible force field death for the bird.
Well, you say this is in the Yukon, right?
Yeah, that's right.
It's interesting because I know that very cold places have way higher rates of alcohol abuse than places that are not very cold because there's nothing else to do when it's that cold but drink a lot.
Right. You can't like go to the beach, so you got to get wasted on drunk berries.
Yeah. So I wonder if that's the same for animals as people. Is like both when we're like stuck in a frozen wasteland, it's like, well, I guess I'm just going to drink myself to death. It's better than another winter.
Well, there was an entire flock of Bohemian waxwings that went on a bender, and
they had to go to a recovery unit, like an animal recovery unit, where they were like, wow, these birds are, they need some fluids and...
just eggs and coffee.
Their beaks were like stained with berries. And the workers at the animal recovery unit were like, their movements are uncoordinated and they struggle to fly.
Oh, poor guy. No, they need some of those little hangover cure shots you get from the CVS.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do those work?
Yeah, they're like, it's just caffeine and acetaminophen. So it's the same as people take coffee and aspirin in the morning.
So does caffeine actually help with hangovers or does it just wake you up?
I mean, it makes you don't feel as bad. Like, caffeine doesn't sober you up if you're still drunk from the night before. But if you, like, wake up feeling like garbage after a night of drinking, I always find that I feel better after coffee.
Interesting. I get wrecked by caffeine. It destroys me. It makes me feel like my heart is gonna fail.
Isn't that how everyone feels all the time?
Yeah. Moving on. So I used to have a phobia of flying. I hated it. Just the idea, like, we shouldn't be in the air. We're defying God. We're spitting in Jesus's face by doing this.
That's the best thing about flying, is like looking down at God and being like,
yeah,
that's right, motherfucker.
Screw you, God. You can't tell me what to do.
We figured this shit out. We could bomb Mount Olympus right now if we wanted to.
You're not my mom, God.
Yeah.
So drunk pilots is a recent thing I started worrying about when I was reading about drunk birds. I was like, I wonder if pilots get drunk. And
how,
like,
could they not?
I know. And they do. Mm-hmm. They do. Not all the time, but occasionally. And occasionally is bad when you're flying a plane.
Well, I don't know. The documentary Flight made me think that sometimes it works out for the better.
Mm. Well, you know, we're gonna get back to that, Robert. Okay. I have a fun story about that.
Oh, good.
But first, let's go to Russia, because that's where...
Oh, boy.
Like,
oh, boy.
I mean, they really love fulfilling stereotypes, and I get to say this because I'm, like, sort of half Russian.
You've got that classic Russian red hair.
Yeah. The classic Jewish Russian who got kicked out because of the pogroms.
Yeah, that's a rough ancestry right there.
So I'm gonna dump on Russia right now. And so, like, there's been a few instances of drunk pilots causing crashes in Russia. In 2011, a drunk navigator was found to be partially responsible for a crash that killed 47 people.
Partially?
Yeah, partially.
Partially?
Maybe.
Which part?
There was, like, a mechanical failure, but if the navigator hadn't been drunk, he probably could have, like, worked around the issue. But instead, he was just, like, panicking and didn't help the situation.
I had something similar happen in my truck while I was drunk with a cigarette lighter and a blunt, so
yeah.
I get it.
You get it.
I get it.
We can all relate to that.
Yeah.
So back in 2009, again in Russia, there was a mutiny on board a plane. I just love that it's in Russia, because just imagining a bunch of, like, angry babushkas on a plane, like, so good.
But I have trouble imagining a group of Russians,
who aren't angry.
Well, yeah, because, like, you would imagine, like, it's like a Murder of Crows and, like, a fury of Russians.
Exactly. So they're on an Aeroflot. I don't know if I'm doing that right, but it's fine.
I think it's Aeroflot, but Aeroflot? I don't really know. I don't really know. I think I've heard it sometimes.
So before the plane had taken off, when they're still on the tarmac, passengers noticed that the pilot, Alexander Chaplevsky, was stumbling, slurring his speech, and according to passengers, he kept repeating the words "duration of the flight."
I see. That's sober. That's sober profiling. That's sober profiling. That's all that is. It's, you know, you. That's not fair. Like, plenty of capable people slur their words, stumble around, and repeat the same phrase a lot of times.
Well, when I get nervous, I sometimes just say, like, duration of the flight, duration of the flight.
Yeah, maybe he just didn't like public speaking.
It's a mantra. It's a mantra, meaning, like you only have to get through this for the duration of the flight.
Yeah, I'm on this guy's side so far.
Well, the flight crew would agree with you because they were telling the passengers to settle down and to stop making trouble. And the passengers... Like, you're talking to Russians who have done, like, several revolutions.
Yeah, don't ever tell Russians to stop making trouble.
And so they continue to rabble. And then Aeroflot representatives came onto the flight to address the issue. And the Moscow Times quotes one of the representatives as saying, "It's not such a big deal if the pilot is drunk. Really, all he has to do is press a button and the plane flies itself. The worst that could happen is he'll trip over something in the cockpit."
See, I'm 100% on board with the company now. That's the kind of straight talking that you want
right.
from a multinational
These planes
corporation.
Fly themselves.
Yeah, it's easy to like. Why? It's fine if he's drunk.
Right.
If he's drunk,
right,
it's
right,
fine.
Right.
Yeah.
But it continued to get worse because the passengers did not take that boilerplate company response. And
why?
I don't know. They were fussy, real fussy.
Jesus.
And so Captain Chaplevsky attempted to bargain with the angry passengers, reportedly saying, "I'll sit here quietly in a corner. We have three more pilots. I won't even touch the controls, I promise."
I'm thinking now that their policy is to have four pilots per flight just because they
right.
At least half of them are going to be wasted. Like,
right,
we
right.
just know that. You got to get one sober guy.
Statistically, it's called the yeah. Stolichnaya rule.
Yeah, so yeah. at least one of them will be so hungover that he can't keep drinking.
Right,
and
right,
that's,
right.
And that's the sober pilot.
Right, right.
Yeah.
It's like having multiple doctors on call because one of them's going to be sleepy. A Russian pilot's going to be drunk at any given point.
Yeah.
So finally, a first class passenger was able to convince the airline to bring in an entirely new crew. And she happened to be a Russian celebrity whose father has ties to Putin.
Well,
so.
Okay. I guess, you know, this ties into my grand theory of rich people ruin everything. Because I bet without first class, all of the people in third class and all the drunk pilots would have had a really cool
yeah,
flight.
Yeah, just like booze playing.
Chilling out, like, fuck yeah. it, break out some cigars, let's turn this into a flying bar.
It's not a party until someone says, "Wait, who's flying the plane right now?"
Well, they fly themselves. You heard. You
yeah,
heard
you
the,
just push a button.
The Moscow Times.
It's
yeah.
the plane fly button. Wings stay on button. Plane fly button.
You don't want to mix those two up.
Right. They're right next to each other. So even after this, the airline continued to insist that the pilot had not been drunk and that he hadn't tested positive for alcohol. And now they're claiming he developed high blood pressure as a result of all the complaints and the stress of the news and stuff, which is funny because high blood pressure is, there's a medical link between repeated binge drinking and high blood pressure, so not.
I mean, okay. All right. Let's let's be fair to this guy.
Right.
First off, if
Lips,
there's a
yeah.
better place to drink than a plane, I haven't found it because
right.
I love getting drunk on planes.
Yeah.
And I don't see why piloting one should make you immune to the fun of getting drunk on a plane.
Especially if it's a one-button plane.
Yeah. It's one of those easy one-button planes.
Right,
why not? Why not?
Why
I
not?
I think people need to lighten up.
Well, after that incident, Russian investigators looked into a 1994 Aeroflot crash that found the pilot had alcohol in his system. At the time, all they knew was that he had allowed his 15-year-old son to take over the controls.
Cool dad.
And subsequently, the plane crashed and killed all those on board.
I wonder why.
I don't know.
That sounds like one of those mysteries with no solutions.
I mean, kids gotta learn somehow.
Yeah.
Like if yeah. not that flight, another flight.
Yeah, I feel like we hold pilots to too high a standard just because hundreds of other people get killed if they make a mistake.
Yeah.
That doesn't seem fair to me.
That's unfair.
Yeah.
Yeah, the double standard, really.
Yeah.
So, you know, is this a big problem? Should
no.
we be afraid to fly? Well, of course you wouldn't think it's a big problem, even if it was. Like, even if 90% of pilots were drunk, you'd be on board with that.
I mean, I feel like people get too worried about what's going to kill them and not worried enough about having a fun time on a plane.
Right, right.
Yeah.
YOLO, you only
land once.
Land once. So this isn't something you should worry about, at least in the U.S., because in 2015, 10 out of 12 1,400 U.S. pilots failed a random alcohol test. So according to that study, if I'm good at math, which I am not, you have a 0.0008% chance of getting on board with a drunk pilot. Don't DM me if my math is wrong. I apologize.
That also means that only 0.008% of pilots are rad.
They're, yeah.
So That's a sobering statistic.
Yeah. So you mentioned earlier Denzel Washington in Flight.
Mm-hmm. I watch it every day.
Who rocked it. He drank, he was drunk, and
he's doing coke too.
Yeah, yeah.
John Goodman's coke.
Yeah, and he landed that plane.
Damn right he did. He barrel rolled that plane.
He crushed it.
Yeah.
Nailed it. And if you want a pilot like that, you should look to New World species of bats.
Okay.
So researchers were wondering, if bats get drunk, can they still echolocate?
That's a great question to ask.
Yeah, like these researchers just probably vaping and being like, man, drunk bats, could they still use their little clicky things?
I imagine it's a guy sitting next to his friend in the car spending 10 minutes to get Google Maps to work.
Right.
I'm like, I got it. Oh, I'm so good at this. I bet I'm better than bats at this.
So they collected about 100 Belize native bats and either gave them sugar or ethanol. They measured the bats' blood alcohol levels, and some of the bats had blood alcohol levels as high as like 0.3. I believe
that's impressive.
Yeah, I believe the limit is 0.008
to drive.
Yeah,
0.08 to drive.
0.08.
Yeah.
I'm bad at those zeros.
At three, you are.
Yeah.
You are not just drunk, but like.
Flammable.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like a tinderbox.
Maybe you need to go to the hospital.
If you're in California, you'll start a fire.
Yeah.
So they're like, all right, they're good and drunk now. Then they set them loose on an obstacle course.
This is my kind of science.
Just like, now a physical challenge. Go! And to their great surprise, the bats nailed it. There was no significant impairment either in their echolocation or their ability to navigate this obstacle course.
So we should let hordes of bats loose on planes and
yes.
hope they hit the one button.
Yes, yes, yes. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Do
okay.
that.
I'm on
yes,
board.
Yes, yes.
I'm on board.
Yes. So this isn't the case for all bats. Some bats will get drunk and then just not be good at flying anymore. But apparently with the New World bats, they have a really high tolerance.
Yeah, you run into a lot of cases of animals that like seek out, like it's a sensible evolutionary strategy to seek out alcohol in mm-hmm. fruit, because if fruit has started to ferment, then it means that it's at its most calorically dense, because it's
yeah.
got it, it's the ripest it's going to get. Which is why, like, there's this animal, the pintailed tree shrew, which is like a mammal that scientists think is pretty close to like one of the common ancestor species that humans and apes share, like
yeah.
one of the early primates. And they will drink all day, every day, because they drink this fruit that ferments really, really quickly. This
yeah.
like palm nectar. But they don't get drunk. But
right.
we think that, like, scientists think that some animal like them seeking out alcohol because it had a shitload of calories is why human beings and monkeys
yeah.
can metabolize alcohol and get drunk off of it, because
yeah.
our bodies sort of adapted to take in more alcohol, and that's like getting wasted is a happy side effect, which is cool.
It's a side effect to survival.
Mm-hmm.
Survival of the littest, hashtag Darwin.
Oh shit, that's good.
Bats can hold their liquor, but what differentiates a lightweight from a beer pong master in humans? It turns out there's something of a drunk gene. Researchers have found out that alcohol tolerance variants can be linked to differences in the CYP2E1 protein found in DNA, which might explain why you're gone after a single beer, whereas others can drink 5 shots off an ice luge. But being a lightweight actually has its benefits. Those that have a greater tolerance for alcohol are at a greater risk of developing alcoholism. While a link between the CYP2E1 protein and alcoholism has not yet been established, there's a possibility that further research could open up new avenues for treatment through gene therapy. Hey, bruh, hold my beer! We're gonna do a few messages and we'll return to the partay.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position.
warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Snopes, the internet rumor debunking website, has a treasure trove of drug-related myths. Some of my favorites are school kids crushing up bed bugs and smoking or injecting them to get high? False. But what about this? Are kids rubbing Burt's Bees lip balm on their eyelids to get high, which the kids dub Beeson? False. What about sham boiling? Are kids boiling shampoo and inhaling the fumes to get high? Well, no, they're not. What about this? Did excessive LSD use leave a young man in a psychiatric hospital with the delusion that he was a glass of orange juice, where his biggest fear is that someone will drink him? Well, that one's unconfirmed, so we may never know whether it's true. But there are real ways in which people and animals will endure the extreme in the name of getting high. I talked to Robert about some of the strangest substances he's tried in the name of researching his book, and we unveiled the animals who are in desperate need of an intervention. Robert, I have a hypothetical question for you that might be upsetting.
Okay.
What if we could have booze in a pill, in like a synthetic booze, or even just a drink that's synthetic, like in Star Trek where they have synthahol? I knew it.
That's one of I love Star Trek The Next Generation. It's a magical show, but it has a lot of dumb things.
Right.
And the dumbest thing in the show, other than that time Riker and his dad fight in weird ass future gladiator suits.
I love dad fights.
Oh, that's such a bad episode. is synthahol.
Mm-hmm.
It just sounds like nonsense the way they showed it. It's just alcohol that you can decide to be sober from?
Well, no. So it's alcohol that has no bad effects. So you can't get alcohol poisoning. You can't get like too drunk. You can't get cirrhosis of the liver. You know, I guess you won't.
So what does it do? How do you?
I don't know. Like it prevents you from drunk texting your ex a bunch of wiener pictures or something? I'm not sure.
That's not a future I want to live in.
But, I mean, like, you sound like I don't want to say Scotty because I feel like that's no longer correct, but, you know, he was like the transporter guy.
Yeah, Scotty.
Scotty,
from the original series.
Okay,
he was drunk all the time.
Yeah, and like he was in the TNG, the Next Generation, and they were like, here's some synthahol, and he's in his Scottish brogue. He's like, no.
He was so pissed.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's garbage.
I cannot drink this nonsense. That is such a bad Scottish accent.
Yeah, that was a clearly Russian accent.
I can't help it. My conditioning. So you're not on board, and I wonder how many people would be on board with synthetic alcohol.
No, it's okay. If you want to see how people would have to cope with being in space for long periods of time.
Yeah.
Look at how they coped with being at sea for long periods of time. And the answer to
having
both...
Having sex with manatees?
That's one.
Right.
That's one part. You're going to need to bring some manatees into space for fucking.
Yeah.
But number two is rum.
Mm.
And I don't buy a future Navy without rum.
That's just a vehicle for sex with the manatee, rum.
Well, okay, so the British Navy was famously able to function because of rum, sodomy, and the lash. So
right.
Star Trek The Next Generation, you've got the sodomy locked down. I mean, that's just clear looking
it's
at
implied.
The way, just Data and Geordi look at each other. But rum is missing because Synthahol's not going to fill that hole in their hearts.
Right.
And neither is Picard's flute playing.
What is it about real alcohol? Like, if the taste is exactly the same and the pleasant effects are the same, but you just can't get the negative effects, is it just because, like, without that risk, it's just, like, it's just too fake? It's like bowling with the guardrails up where you get a strike, but it doesn't feel good.
Well, yeah, the most fun things always involve some sort of risk
right.
of them ending terribly.
Right.
Which is why people love to ski. Like, it's exciting and you can die. But yeah, so like, if alcohol can't hurt you, then it's less exciting. But also, like, I don't know. I feel like the lame future people in Star Trek The Next Generation say it tastes the same. But I feel it's the same as like going to a party and like someone handing me a mocktail and being like, it tastes just like a whiskey sour. And like, no, it doesn't.
Yeah.
This is just lemon juice.
What if we spice up the deal and say that this Synthahol also somehow simulates the experience of sex?
What?
Yeah. Well, like
did I miss an episode?
No. Well, maybe. But like, you know, like in Futurama, that episode where everybody's having sex with robots and then the human race goes extinct?
Yes.
Do you think if we had sex in pill form, that would happen?
I mean, that's the best case scenario for the human future.
Well, we'd go out with a lot of fun, and then we'd stop harassing animals.
I feel like our best case scenario is we invent a super intelligent AI that's self-sustaining, and then it gives us sex pills and discards us like a cocoon. That's like my hope for the future of our race.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's such a that's like a really humane way for the robots to take over. Like in The Matrix, just have a sex matrix. We would have, nobody would have left.
Yeah, the fuck matrix. Like somebody wakes up and he's like, no, why would you fight against this?
No one would try to wake up from the fuck matrix.
Yeah. No, you're totally free to leave, but like you got to pay taxes and stuff. Like, nope, back to the fuck matrix.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, so this is not just pleasant hypothetical meandering. You know how insects, they like to drink booze. There's theories that it helps with their spermatophores, which are these like protein capsules that they transfer along with their protein capsules. Mm-hmm. So they transfer it to the female along with their sperm during copulation, and it provides nutrition. And drinking booze, you know, like gives them some kind of nutritional boost, like you were saying earlier. And so they think that maybe that's why. But they found that. So these researchers made like this synthetic booze sex thing. It combined, like it both replaced sex and booze for these fruit flies. So when male fruit flies are sexually rejected, they will turn to booze more often to heal their emotional wounds. And
like all of us.
And the study just like following these poor like unlaid fruit flies and seeing like how much they drink, and you know, it's very, very relatable. But the crazy part is, so they suspected that maybe it was because after they have sex they get this spike in neuropeptide F, and drinking alcohol triggers that neuropeptide F, so it's the next best thing to actual love and physical contact. And
that's how I would describe alcohol.
And then artificial simulation of neuropeptide F. So this is not alcohol. This is not sex. This is a crazy, creepy science thing that they give to the fruit flies. It stops them from seeking out alcohol. So it like replicates the rewards gained from either having sex or drinking booze, so that these rejected fruit flies are like once they get this neuropeptide F, they don't feel the need to drink.
Well, I mean, that's clearly inevitable that, like, science will figure out a way to, with the push of a button and maybe the stimulation of a couple of chemicals, make you as happy as you are in the arms of a person you love.
Or, right.
Like, walking through Disneyland as a six-year-old with your parents back before they split up. Like,
right.
That's inevitable. It's going to happen. It's going to collapse everything that we know, and either robots will take over or we'll just fuck ourselves to death.
I didn't actually see that they did a study to see if giving them the neuropeptide F stops them from having sex. And I would really like to see that, especially if you do it to mosquitoes or something else we don't like, because then we could, like, make animals go extinct even easier.
Yeah, boy, that's one of those, like, yeah, why not? Why not release it into the air? Like, it could be, like, in Snowpiercer, how they, like, freeze the whole planet trying to fix it. What if we just flood the whole planet's atmosphere with this happy fuck chemical?
Right.
And everything just sort of goes to bed and dies.
That sounds like a much nicer way than freezing the Earth.
It sounds like a much nicer way than what's going to happen otherwise.
Right. Like, maybe we could just have this fail-safe, like here's the fuck bomb. Like, like, we're going to die anyways. Might as well have it be nice.
Yeah, look, the world's got maybe 2 years left. We're going to set off the fuck bomb. it's fine.
Yeah, and everyone's like, probably, like, at first it's like, oh, but I want to live. But as soon as that fuck bomb goes off, it's like, oh, all right.
You know what? This is fine, too.
This is fine.
Yeah.
And so here's the cool thing, is that researchers are starting to link neuropeptides to alcohol intake in humans as well. So we are so close to this fuck bomb becoming a reality.
That's always been the dream.
Yeah, it is. It's the goal. It's what we have done from our earliest bone-wielding days to now. And there is a champion of this cause, David Nutt, who...
Great name for a champion of any cause.
Oh, he's got the perfect name to be a contentious neuropsychopharmacologist.
Dr. Nutt.
Dr. Nutt! Mr. Dr. Nutt.
Mm-hmm.
So he was on the advisory council on the misuse of drugs in the UK, and he was relieved of his position after he said that horse riding is more dangerous than ecstasy.
Oh, this guy.
Yeah.
He's totally right.
Yeah.
I mean, he's 100% right, because horseback riding is incredibly dangerous.
Yes. You can snap like a twig on a horse.
We'll just get kicked trying to get on it and being dumb.
That horse falls asleep, falls on you, you're done.
Mm-hmm.
Your ribs smashed in. But the British really take their equestrianism. I don't know that.
Equestrian?
Equestrianism. There we go.
Yeah.
I'm smart. I know words. They take it super seriously. And it was very offensive to them that they would make this unfavorable comparison between ecstasy and horses. But I loved in their comments about it how it was like, they're like, oh, this is such an inappropriate comparison. But they didn't like mention like, that he was saying ecstasy is better than horses.
Yeah, it is better than horses.
Yeah. Don't do drugs, but also don't do horses. That's what I'm going to legally, safely say. Anyways, David Nutt is studying benzodiazepines, which... I knew you'd like it.
I love benzos.
Yeah. So they're found in Valium.
They sure are.
And Valium's just lovely.
Valium is found in Mexico.
And in mother's coffee. So he's seeing if he can replicate the pleasant effects of alcohol while avoiding the dangerous side effects. And he's also saying that benzos can be switched off with an antidote pill, which would be so great for Russian pilots. Just like get real drunk on benzos. Then turn it off before your flight when people get fussy.
See, that sounds like the real synthahol.
Right.
Is not change alcohol, but just add a little switch inside people's heads. Right. You're like, oh, I got to be sober now.
Right.
And then you're good.
You should make it external, though, so other people can operate the switch.
You can see whether or not, like, red light, green light. Okay, like, no, you gotta switch off, man.
Just remote controlled, like.
Yeah, I know you spent $40 on vodka shots last night, but you really gotta, like, there's a plane to be flown.
So, Robert, this is my favorite part because I get to ask you, how far have you gone to test out getting high?
I mean, in terms of danger or in terms of distance?
Yes.
Okay. So in my book, one of the last chapter is about, there's this drug I read about on Cracked years and years ago called Salamander Brandy.
Mm-hmm.
That is a local beverage to Slovenia. And Slovenia is a tiny little Balkan nation of like 200 or like 2 million people, something like a very, very tiny country. You can drive across it in 2 hours. So they have this drink that's made from drowning a salamander to death in brandy.
Poor baby.
Yeah, it's horrible. It's a horrible process. And the salamander, as it's drowning, releases a shitload of poison.
Oh, no.
According a guy named Blaž Ogorevci, who is like a Slovenian Hunter S. Thompson, is kind of how I would describe him.
Okay.
He wrote an article in the 90s for a magazine called Mladina about his experiences on salamander brandy and claimed that it caused spontaneous, uncontrollable sexual attraction to inanimate objects. That he wanted to fuck trees on it. Like, it just got him so lit that he, like, couldn't stop, like, trying to get his hands on a local tree.
I mean, it's a belief of this podcast that trees are very sexy.
Well, then you would agree with this brandy.
Yeah.
Or at least the mythical
reputation.
The brandy
would agree with me, it sounds like.
Well, maybe not. I mean, I traveled there, and I spent, like, 8 or 9 days trying to track down salamander brandy. Mm. I went all over. I found a bunch of different brandy makers and saw their stills, and I drank a lot of terrible Slovenian, like, I had cumin brandy, which is unbelievably bad.
Ew.
I had some very good honey brandy too, but like, I've never had anything as bad as cumin liquor.
Oh, that sounds so bad.
They kept giving us free bottles of cumin liquor, and we're like, what do we do with this?
Because they're trying to get rid of it.
Yeah, because it's the worst idea anyone's ever had. But I couldn't find the salamander brandy. So I headed home, and I learned as I was like, desperately trying to find someone who'd brought some of this stuff to the States and who could maybe get me some.
Yeah,
I found out that you can just buy the kind of salamanders that they have over there. And so I had one delivered to my door, and they sent it to me within like 48 hours.
Was it alive?
Yeah. Like a living little salamander. Well, no, okay. So I was like, I love amphibians and reptiles.
Yeah.
I've had them since I was a kid, frogs and turtles. And I was like, I'm not going to murder a little animal to get drunk.
Right.
So I got him. I set him up in like a cage and everything. Like, I got him like a good habitat, and I let it give him about 30 days to settle in.
Uh-huh.
And then once every 3 days, I would wash off a pair of non-latex gloves.
Okay.
And I would pick him up, and I would massage his poison glands until he secreted poison onto my hand.
Yeah.
And then I would put him back in the cage. I'd let him rest for a couple of days, and I did that like a dozen times until I had. I would wash the gloves off with liquor. And then I simmered it all once I had about a pint's worth. Mm-hmm. And then I drank all of that in the course of, I don't know, 20 or 30 minutes.
All right.
And I didn't feel spontaneously attracted to animals, but it almost paralyzed my legs. Like, I couldn't walk
God.
A while. Like, I was like wobbly 14 or 15 hours later. It had like terrible motor coordination.
It was just like,
and there's some paralytic agents inside the poison. So I was like, okay, maybe that's what was going on. But
I don't want to endorse this, but I feel like maybe if you had drowned the salamander, maybe you would have been attracted to inanimate objects. Like, you didn't do it right. So.
That's possible. I can't confirm that because I wasn't able to find any of it.
Yeah. Not like you could walk towards like the chair you were suddenly interested in.
Yeah, if I'd wanted to fuck the chair, I probably couldn't have made my way over to it.
Also, was it pleasant or like?
No.
Oh, no, because you didn't kill it.
No, he's still alive as far as I know. I gave him to a biology student at a local university, so he found a good home.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
He's like a biology student of like dissections.
I mean, it's Humboldt State, so he's probably a hippie kid.
Right.
Yeah.
So it wasn't pleasant. And
I wouldn't say so.
Were you in danger? Like, do you think it could have killed you?
I mean, maybe if I'd had more.
Okay.
It certainly wasn't good.
Yeah.
I wouldn't recommend it to anyone.
Yeah. So don't do salamanders. Don't do horses. Maybe, but you didn't hear it from me. Don't do wink ecstasy. But don't. Seriously, don't do it, legally speaking. So what's a rat parent's worst nightmare? It's not drug pushers, it's scientists. There are tons of studies that look at the effects of drugs on rats, with the hope that it may treat human addiction. But these dastardly drug lord scientists haven't been able to offload their drugs on non-mammals until just recently.
Neuroscientists at the University of Scranton have gotten ants addicted to morphine. The study's senior author, Mark Sade, says, "We can addict individual ants and see how that affects the ant's social network, which is somewhat like humans." The study found that after developing an addiction to morphine, the ants even preferred it to sugar, and ants are like crazy for sugar. Then, because the study wouldn't be complete without a torture porn element, the researchers removed the ants' brains and measured higher amounts of dopamine. And dopamine indicates a similar response in ants as in humans to the morphine. Not content to stop there, the next step in their research is to see if they can tear apart the fabric of ant society by introducing a morphine epidemic. We need to take a quick break to hold an antervention. In the meantime, here's a message. Back soon.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
So my favorite song from West Side Story is Officer Krupke. I remember it being shown in a history of psychiatry class. It was meant to illustrate how mental hygiene and juvenile delinquents had entered the public consciousness. But is there truth to the idea that young people are more susceptible to being troublemakers? Can we find examples of young punk animals? Robert and I discuss the science on whether the kids are all right, and we find a rather literal example in the wild of the Jets versus the Sharks, except it's otters versus the Sharks, and spoiler, the Sharks usually win. And we are back. So Robert was just telling me about how salamander juice booze was not a fun time. And, like, I feel worse for the salamanders that get drowned to make the booze, but it's also a little bit strange, I feel like, for that salamander to just get, like, massaged for his juices.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it sounds kind of okay, but also just, like, just a little like, did he make eye contact with you ever, and was it, like, super awkward?
He certainly didn't understand what was happening.
Right.
He was a salamander.
Right.
But, you know, I don't know. It's one of those. I'm not going to claim that, like, it was an act of
right.
goodness to massage him for his poison. It was necessary for science.
Yeah. I mean, it affects me on a deep personal level because when I was a kid, I read this book called Chocolate Fever, where the kid eats so much chocolate, he breaks out in a chocolate rash. And people are trying to lick him, and, like, dogs.
Oh, that's horrible.
Yeah. And dogs, like, chase after him, trying to lick him, which is really horrifying because, first of all, chocolate is poison to dogs.
Were they suicidal dogs?
I don't know. I think dogs just love chocolate and they don't know any better. So it's like dogs are chasing him, but if he lets them catch them, he gets mauled and the dogs die. It's the worst thing.
But that book, like, gave me nightmares. Just the idea of, like, someone like, wow, your skin looks delicious. I'm going to lick it. And so I feel a lot of sympathy for your salamander, but also for toads, because, you know, the whole toad licking thing, it's not purely an urban legend, although there are aspects to it that are sort of apocryphal. But, like,
yeah,
you can get high from licking cane toads.
Well, not from licking them. You got to scrape the poison
off
and smoke
gotta,
it.
You got to.
Yeah.
Well, you can't chew on them. You can suck on them and get it. I'm pretty sure.
I've never heard that, but you may be right.
Well,
I'd always heard you had to. It's like it's a DMT that's in there, right?
Right.
Yeah, it's 5-MeO DMT, I think.
Yeah.
And I'd always heard that you had to get the poison and then you had to dry it and then you would, like, basically smoke it in a crack pipe.
That may be true for humans. For dogs, they just go full ham on that toad and just start chewing on it.
Sweet.
So in humans, it's not really that big of a problem. Like, teens aren't doing toad pods. They're just like, you know, there's a professor of tropical and emerging infectious diseases, his name's Bart Curie, who claims that there have been a lot of deaths in other parts of the world from people trying to use cane toad venom for recreational purposes. And he's doing research into, like, how snakes are able to survive it and for a possible antidote. But that's not, I think that's probably what you're saying. I don't think that's toad licking. I think that's they're just using the venom and processing it. But there haven't been any deaths in Australia from cane toad licking. But there have been deaths in dogs, because they love them. They just pick them up in their mouths and they start, like, chewing on them.
Yeah,
it's
a slow, fat treat.
And they get super high. And, I mean, it's sad because there have been 50 reported dog deaths a year in Australia. But, like, there are some more lighthearted ones where it's like there's this family whose dog, Lady, was caught sucking toads all the time. And they said, and this is a quote, "We noticed Lady spending an awful lot of time down by the pond in our backyard." Then they say, "She finally staggered over to me from the cattails. She looked up at me, leaned her head over, and opened her mouth like she was going to throw up, and out plopped this disgusting toad."
She had the whole toad in her mouth?
Yeah.
But they're big, right?
Yeah.
They're like sizable toads.
Oh, yeah. Cane toads are big. They're like the size of a large... Well, they're bigger than a rat, I think.
Do we have a picture of this lady's mouth?
This is a dog named Lady.
Oh.
Sorry. No, this is a dog named Lady.
Gotcha.
Named Lady.
Okay. Then that makes total sense.
This lady just, like,
yeah,
spending a lot of time by the pond, shoving entire toads in her
mouth.
Yeah,
that's what I imagine it, like, almost Twilight Zone thing, where this, like, woman walks up to you from your backyard and you're like, "Is something wrong, ma'am?" And she's
oh, God.
Just a giant toad pours out of her face.
That sounds like a David Lynch thing, and I don't like it.
Oh, yeah, that does sound like a David Lynch
that
film.
That was, in fact, in the new Twin Peaks, like, that frog thing crawls into that chick's mouth. Ugh.
I haven't watched any of the Twin Peaks.
David Lynch, you stinker.
I drink his coffee sometimes.
Really?
Yeah, David.
He has a coffee
David
brand?
Lynch. It's called David Lynch Coffee.
No.
Yep.
Is it, like, weird with vague references to Native Americans?
It's just good coffee. I think David Lynch just likes coffee.
Damn
and
good coffee.
Has a coffee.
So, fugu fish, Robert.
Oh, yeah.
You ever tried it?
No, but I watched the Simpsons episode.
Yes, mm-hmm. I believe we all have. So there's the episode where Homer eats the fugu fish, which a fugu fish is a puffer fish. And they're extremely toxic, but parts of the fish are very good sushi. And in the episode, which is racist, it is a racist episode, thanks the Simpsons, like the chef is just like some intern and he doesn't know what he's doing.
Well, because the other chef's getting laid in
the
van.
By Mrs. Kabopple.
Yeah, that's not racist. That's beautiful.
Well, that part's not racist. No, having sex with Kabopple is just a natural thing.
Yeah.
But, like, so in the episode, he may have eaten it, but they're not sure because this inexperienced chef prepares it. And so the doctor's like, "You probably have only 48 hours to live." And, But that's not how it works. I mean, people do occasionally die from it, but very occasionally. From 2004 to 2013, there were only 12 deaths from eating fugu, and there's a treatment for it, which is you go to the hospital, they keep your respiratory and circulatory systems going until you can get the poison out of your system the natural way.
Yeah, and then you're only, what, $250,000 in debt?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
I don't know how healthcare works like in Japan.
No, it's way better in Japan.
I'm sure it is, yeah. But it is scary because the toxin paralyzes you while you remain fully conscious and you eventually die from asphyxiation, being unable to breathe. So its method of action is similar to sarin gas.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Cool, but in a fish. That's hip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, you can go to a hospital. But there are no dolphin hospitals, and dolphins are having the reefer madness.
Wait, are dolphins getting high off of pufferfish?
Yes.
That's fantastic.
Yes.
Because it's like living heroin.
Mm-hmm.
If you get high off of
mm-hmm.
it, it's like, because you
it's
just
like a
shoot
ball
it
of,
up.
It's like a ball of needles you find on the ground, and you're just like, ooh, this is a living ball of needles. I'm going to rub up against it. So they like play a little dolphin volleyball with it.
That's
and then, like,
amazing.
And then researchers report seeing them lying around on the floor of the ocean in a catatonic state.
Now, first off, that's amazing to be the pufferfish in that situation. Because mm-hmm. I imagine if you're an animal like a pufferfish, that
right.
means instant death to anything that touches you.
Yeah.
You have a lot of confidence.
Yeah.
It's like always having the Mario star that
right.
makes you invulnerable. And then, like, dolphins come into the picture. Like, what yeah. is happening?
Oh, can you imagine, like, zorbing? And, like, so the zorb is one of those big orbs that you go into, and it's, like, this, like, inflatable ball that you're in the center of. And then, like, having just, like, large marine animals, like killer whales, just, like, booping you around.
Is that an option for life?
I hope so. Make it
zorbing?
Happen.
It sounds like you're describing a dream.
No. I mean, the zorb is real. I don't think having killer whales boop you around while you are inside of the zorb is real.
That feels like an oversight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, like, Tesla, get on it. So, yeah, but that does seem fun for both the dolphin and the pufferfish. Marine biologist Christy Wilcox says she's skeptical that dolphins are intentionally drugging themselves, but come on.
Of course they are.
Come
fucking,
on.
Fucking horses get high intentionally
Christy,
on loco
like,
weed.
Open
like,
your eyes.
Yeah.
I know they're your precious babies, but, you know, you got to have the talk with them.
Like, an animal doesn't have to be smart to want to get drunk, but we know that lots of, like, elephants will seek out alcohol and get wasted. Elephants will kill people to get access to their wine. So, dolphins are smart.
Of course,
it's intentional.
I disagree with you, expert marine biologist Christy Wilcox. I'm calling you out.
Well, I feel like she might be an expert on animals, but she's
right.
not an expert on getting wrecked.
Right, right.
Yeah.
That is true. You need to be both.
Mm-hmm.
So she describes the pufferfish toxin as 120,000 times as deadly as cocaine, 400,000 times as deadly as meth, and more than 50 million times as deadly as THC. Although, wait, is THC deadly at all?
I don't think it has an LD50, which is like the amount of it that you would have to take to die. I don't
right.
know if that's ever been determined, which is not to say that you couldn't, but
yeah, I feel like 50 million maybe might do it. 50 million.
50 million pots.
Of pots, yeah.
50 million of it.
50 million pots.
My questioning here actually is, okay, so she's saying that this poison is 120,000 times deadlier than cocaine
mm-hmm.
and 400,000 times deadlier than meth,
mm-hmm.
which means is she saying, now I'm not a smart man, I'm not good at math, but is she saying that, like, it seems like from her calculus then that she's saying that cocaine is a lot deadlier than meth?
I mean, that seems to be what the math is saying.
So I have some questions right off the bat, because I feel like, first off, having done both of those substances, like methamphetamine is a way more powerful drug, and I
right.
feel like it kills a lot more people than just cocaine. Now, maybe if we're comparing it to crack, like, they're on more of an even keel.
Yeah.
But
maybe that's what she means. Maybe she's just too fancy to say crack.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. I can't speak for marine biologist Christy Wilcox.
Also, is it 400,000 times as fun as cocaine?
I don't know. She didn't say. I would assume so, though. Like, in 120, it'd be 120,000 1,000 times more fun than cocaine and 40,000 more fun than meth.
Because cocaine's not very fun.
Right.
But I feel like 120,000 times funner would be really fun.
She also says, and this I think is more in her wheelhouse, she says it's tens to hundreds of times more lethal than the venoms of the most notorious animals in the world, including the widow spiders and the black mamba. It's more potent than VX nerve gas, formaldehyde, or even ricin. It is quite literally one of the most toxic compounds known to man.
Okay, but none of this is her talking about how fun it is to get high off.
No, she didn't say how fun it is, which makes me think it's really, really fun.
Or is it possible that it's just like dolphin chocolate? Like, so, like, chocolate's great for us. It's delicious.
Yeah.
But dogs die from it. Maybe they're fine taking this shit, but it kills everything else.
Dogs is to chocolate is to humans. As humans is to puffer fish is to dolphins.
Yes.
Yay.
Yeah, I feel like that's probably what's going on.
Yeah.
Like, they're just having the equivalent of a Dr. Pepper.
Yeah, 100%.
But to us, it's instant death.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, she didn't say any dolphins has died from this. Maybe they have, but yeah. She didn't say.
I mean, I feel like we nailed this and should get the credit for that solution.
Yeah, nailed it.
Yeah.
So let's talk to the teens for a minute. Let's talk to some teens.
Are there teenagers here? Because I was not told that.
No. why do you need to know, Robert?
I don't like teenagers.
Yeah, well.
I don't approve of them.
Well, you know, don't do teens. Stop being teens.
We should have an island for teenagers and then a country for adults.
Yeah, yeah. Teen Island. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine how sick and rad it would be to be on Teen Island?
I don't want to imagine. I just want them to be locked away.
Well, you know, so all those teens, all that dabbing, all the Tide Pod, all the Toad Pod.
Dabbing, are we talking about the dance move?
The dabbing. The dance dabs.
The dance dabs.
The dance dabs that the teenagers like to do.
What?
The teenagers do of the dab. So, like, we think they're just idiots. And, I mean, like, scientifically, a little bit.
Yeah.
But, like, we do overestimate their risk-taking, at least by one metric, which is that when the risk is of something known, like drugs or sex, they overestimate how risky it is. So they think things, and God bless our sex education, but when they were polled, it was found that teens think there's a 60% chance of a girl getting HIV if she's having sex, which is a little off because in the U.S., the lifetime risk for women is only 1 in 241.
So I feel like that's as much an indictment of our mathematics classes as it is of our sex ed.
math and sex. My history teacher was my sex ed teacher, and like.
Oh, that sounds.
Oh
great.
No! I'm sorry. My economics teacher was my sex ed teacher, and he would like pop in a John Stossel, and I'm like, "Are we learning about sex or economics? I can't tell. They're both great.
The same with John Stossel.
So I mean, teens are big risk takers, but like when the outcome is unknown, they are much more likely to want to take risks and. Also, while teens are still the biggest binge drinking demographic, the rates of alcohol consumption amongst teens have been going down for at least a decade.
That's good.
Yeah. And I liked how the authors of the article was like, is it social media? Maybe.
I mean, it's like there's a lot of things happening right now that have never happened before. So you're going to latch on to any of those. But you could also be like,
is it
Uber?
Is it Tide Pods?
Probably the Tide Pods.
Tide Pods has replaced... Millennials are killing the alcohol industry with the Tide Pods. So, conversely, alcohol consumption has been increasing amongst the baby boomer demographic. Especially for those who are educated and are women. So shout out to my smart old ladies getting crunk.
Well, it's safer for old women to get drunk than young women.
I don't know if that's true.
No, it is. It is. It's safer to get drunk after you have had a kid.
Oh, really?
Because breast tissue continues to develop until the point at which you get pregnant and developing. That's why you don't want kids to drink, because developing tissue is more likely to be affected. So you have a higher risk of breast cancer if you drink before your pregnancy as opposed to starting afterwards.
Okay. Yeah. No, I didn't know that. That's really interesting. I wish you hadn't told me that. No.
No, none of it's good news.
Well, that is interesting. So they are, I guess they're just like, it's time. It is time.
Just fuck it.
Time for the uncorking.
Yeah.
But I mean, teens are still, I mean, they still do drink the most. It's just.
Good.
I think it is good.
Slow them down a little
bit. Yeah. But like, you know, like catch them up. Like my fine old educated ladies, you know, beat them.
Mm-hmm.
Take them down.
No, I feel like anything that slows these kids, look at them. They're all getting into politics now. You just got to slow them down.
Yeah. Drunk protesting. That doesn't, once you've had a few drinks, you don't feel like being politically active.
No, that's what the NRA ought to do. Is just give more money to whatever charity tries to get kids to drink.
Be the National Rum Association.
Yeah, there you go.
So teen animals, I'm sorry to say human teens, are way more extreme than you. So I believe you wrote about this in your book, but teen vervet monkeys love alcohol, and they prefer it over sugar water. And there are stories about people capturing monkeys by offering them rum and molasses and coconut shells.
Yeah.
Didn't you write about this?
I didn't write about vervet monkeys, but other monkeys have been found drinking too. It's like a monkey thing. They love to get lit.
Yeah, and like I just love that like these old timey people would put rum and molasses in coconut shells and like the monkeys get wasted and they just like pick up the monkeys and like the monkeys are like, dude, are you my Uber?
I'm gonna be honest, that's almost certainly how we got AIDS.
Oh,
it's just people getting monkeys drunk and then one of them's not quite drunk enough and bites you and fucking AIDS.
Oh, I thought you were going in a way different direction.
No.
And I'm glad.
Oh, hey, that's not cool.
But you know, like with these like stupid challenges, like now there's the condom snorting challenge, which
okay, you're gonna have to catch me up on this one.
Well, I don't actually know. I am not a teenager, so I'm not really sure. I think it's like snorting. I think an unused condom. I don't know why. I don't know how or any of the details. Or even if it's a thing, or if it's just Fox News being like, teenagers?
Yeah, I feel like there's two types of this thing, and one of them is like Oprah's lipstick parties where it's never happened,
right.
And like somebody just makes it up, and it's
right.
such a good story for salacious news. And then there's like Tide Pods where like two people do it for a laugh, and then it's like, oh, this is a craze that's hitting the country.
Like, Anthony, Jason, stop it.
Yeah.
You two. But then everyone else gets the rap for it.
Yeah.
Well, so imagine, though, that, like, the new, like, Tide Pods is, like, teenagers going to a really, really dangerous part of the world, like, just, like, going to North Korea for spring break or something, which I'm actually not sure how dangerous that is for tourists.
I mean, if you do it legally, it's pretty safe, as long as you don't try to steal a banner.
Yeah. Oh, man. But, like, if they went there and they're, like, trying to... like take down like graffitiing over statues, putting like weird little mustaches on propaganda posters, just like seeking out the most dangerous like active war zones that they can possibly go to and then Snapchatting from it. It's just all these like teenage guys going like, what's up Snapchat, here I am, like sounds like there's some drones overhead, anyways, like and subscribe.
I bet we could get Logan Paul to do that and also solve our Logan Paul problem.
Two birds with one stone.
Yeah. I know some places we should send Logan Paul.
So obnoxious.
Yeah. It makes total sense. Like, dangerous stuff is fun. It's always been fun. And it's probably always... That's why some groups of human beings left... Like, you look at, like, early human life and, like... Eastern Africa, where like the first people were. It's like, it's nice. You got all the food you need. You pick it up. Like, there's some animals you got to worry about, but like, it's a pretty chill life. You only have to work a couple hours a day. But like, some people are like, you know that place like across the ocean that always looks like it's stormy and cold and miserable? I bet it's cool.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
I bet it's dangerous and then chicks will be impressed.
Well, that's definitely how otters feel, because teenage otters like to venture into the triangle of death.
Oh, boy.
Which is so metal sounding. Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just teenage boy otters like juvenile male otters who go to this triangle, and it is in fact a death triangle because it's full, it's in the ocean south of San Francisco Bay. It's full of great white sharks, strong currents, sharp rocks, and it's riddled with T. gondii.
Oh, yeah. It's a murder beach. Yeah.
Yeah. It's the death triangle. And, like, conservationists don't find adult otters. They don't find baby otters because the moms are, like, holding their little hands because otters are so cute.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, teenage punk otters are going in, like, male otters, yeah, too. Apparently the female otters are just, like, not having any of it. But, like, they're the only ones that the conservationists tend to find in this, in, like, the death zone.
Yeah, it's like the otter equivalent of Vice News going out there and, yeah.
Yeah, just, like, we just went into this pool of sharks and checking it out, and they're, like, in their, like, stupid little, like hipster uniforms.
Yeah, so otters like to risk danger like the rest of us. Like,
yeah.
It's the same. It's the otter equivalent of joining the Marine Corps.
Yeah, like sharp rocks and sharks and T. gondii.
Yeah. Is that the same thing that cats have?
Yeah, it's the thing that rats get that makes them like cats.
Ah, so that's fun.
It is fun.
Yeah, that would be, like, the thing to do if you could go back in time to, like, really upset the military history is just, like, airdrop a bunch of cats on the Mongols and then be like, oh, they can't fight so good no more.
Didn't some group of people do the thing where they strapped bombs to cats? Like, I think we've tried to weaponize cats a few times.
The U.S. tried a thing where they wanted to strap bombs to pigeons and drop hundreds of thousands of pigeons on Tokyo, and then the pigeons would hide in houses and ignite.
No.
But then we figured out a nuke, and that was easier.
Oh, that's
worse,
but the other one's pretty bad, too.
I mean, they're morally different, because, like, one of them involves murdering a bunch of animals to murder a bunch of people.
Right.
And one of them is just murdering more people for a longer period of time.
I would still have to say the non-pigeons one is worse, which sounds really bad because the first one is still... They're both bad. It's not a contest.
Yeah, but only one of them would get protested by PETA.
Harsh but true.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought someone tried to do, like, a surveillance with cats once, too. Like,
I mean, they may have.
And then, like, the cat just, like, immediately got hit by a car.
I feel like any plan that involves a cat doing a thing that is not whatever the cat wants
to do
is not a good plan.
No, don't invest your military bucks into cats, guys. Yeah. How should we go about dealing with human teens? Is there a way to curb their risky behavior? A lot of our culture seems to believe in scaring the crap out of kids to get them to stop risky behaviors. Terrifying PSAs or movies like Red Asphalt. With the goal of showing so much gore and terror, kids will be too scared to do anything stupid. But does this actually help? Researchers looked at Scared Straight, a prison visitation program meant to frighten young people away from engaging in criminal activity by showing them unsettling consequences. But not only did the program fail to reduce the numbers of juvenile offenders, it actually seemed to increase them, ranging from 2 to 5% across a number of studies. So, what can adults do? One study suggested that open communication with parents reduced the amount of sexual risk-taking in teens. So, as uncomfortable as it is, a frank, honest discussion about the birds and the bees might be the only way to go about it. Speaking of birds, scientists created some daredevil finches in the lab. They bred a line of finches who naturally produce more cortisone, which is a stress hormone, in response to startling situations. These high-level stress hormone birds took greater risks and were bolder in exploring new environments to find seed. The scientists would also test their braveness by startling them with food dishes that would snap closed, and found out that the hero birds weren't so easily scared off. So, let me get this straight. Scientists have created fearless birds whom they've repeatedly tormented, thus giving them a motivation for revenge. Let it be known that I've never done anything to betray bird kind and will gladly offer bread in exchange for my life. So, Robert, is there anywhere we could follow you?
You can find me on the Twitters at @iwriteok. That's my Twitter, okay, two letters. And you can find my book on Amazon. It's called A Brief History of Vice, and you can buy it and be my friend.
It's really great. And also check out Robert's new podcast.
Oh, yes.
By this, I don't know when this episode is coming out. It might just everyone's heard of it and everyone loves it. And I just sound like a real lame.
Fingers crossed. But my new podcast is Behind the Bastards. It's going to drop May 1st. There will be a new episode every Tuesday. And yeah, we talk about stuff like I said, Saddam Hussein's romance novel career, the mysteries of Osama bin Laden's porn stash, Hitler's favorite young adult author, and just a bunch of other wacky shit about the worst people in history.
I'm so excited.
Behind the Bastards.
Oh, man. I'm so
excited. BastardsPod on Twitter. We're all around the internet.
That's going to be great. So you can follow me on Twitter. I am at Katie Golden, and I am also at Pro Bird Rights, which is my bird sona. You should do that, please.
Spitting some hot fire about bird truth.
Yeah, speaking bird truth. Speaking bird to power. Thanks so much for listening. If there is a next Wednesday, please join us again.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.